This is Once Again, It's Your Body. You're in the studio with Cheyenne and Grace. Hi, Cheyenne.
Hi, Grace.
All right. So tonight we have a very special show, but first I'm going to do the underwriting report. It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community and festival events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org, and by Satava Art Glass Studio, creating internationally acclaimed art glass in Chico since 1977. You can experience the magic of Satava Art Glass by visiting their gallery at 819 Wall Street. So today, it's a very sensitive topic that we're talking about. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I'm in the studio with my co-host and great friend, Cheyenne.
Yes, hello.
Oh, my mic's not. Your mic is working. I can hear you. All right. So today, since we wanted to give a disclaimer to all the listeners, due to the statistics and the number of people who are impacted by this issue, we need to recognize that it might be difficult for some people to hear about this subject. Yeah. So if this is a topic that might upset you, I would suggest going to another station.
Yeah. Good.
Hi, Cheyenne.
Hi, Grace.
You're my rock.
Technical difficulties. It's what we're good at.
Oh, mercy's long. All right. So as we had discussed, we wanted to talk about Sexual Assault Awareness Month because it impacts so many people. And how it directly relates to our community. It's a college town. There's a lot going on. So once again, we have this warning. So if this is something that might be sensitive to you, you might change stations. So we've asked someone from GSEC mm-hmm. to join us.
Hi. Alicia. Hi, just Alicia. Got in. We're going to get
she
her.
She just joined us in the studio.
Hooked up.
So we wanted to talk about this because while some individuals remain silent, the likelihood that you know someone impacted by sexual assault is very high. When I looked at Safe Place on CSU Chico, their website, I looked at the statistics and they said that 1 in 5 college-aged women have been sexually assaulted and 8 out of 10 individuals knew the perpetrator. And directly related to this, which is something we really want to discuss later, is that 1 in 6 men are survivors of childhood sexual abuse or molestation. We need to talk about this. It might be painful. It mm-hmm. might be uncomfortable. But mm-hmm. the cycle of silence, it's got to be stopped. It's for our families, our sisters, our mm-hmm. brothers, our mothers, and our fathers. It impacts everyone. Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, sure. My name is Annalicia. I am currently the Women's Program Coordinator at the AS Gender and Sexuality Equity Center on the Chico State campus. We put on events every semester. We have a women's program, LGBTQ plus program, trans program, outreach program. So we're just kind of serving as a resource for students. Mm-hmm. And we put on various events. This semester, actually next week, our upcoming event is called Take Back the Night. And of course, it is super relevant to this radio show and to mm-hmm. Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's an event where people can come to show support and solidarity for survivors of sexual assault and where survivors can come and hopefully feel a sense of empowerment mm-hmm. and just support from their community. So it yeah. can be really helpful and really empowering for a lot of people.
Right.
So,
and that's an important thing to remember is the hope aspect is that since so many people are impacted, you know, we are all in this together and we need to stand together to stop it and prevent it.
Mm-hmm. When is Take Back the Night?
Take Back the Night is April 20th to the 22nd this year. So we expanded it to like a week's worth of activities. And the main event is going to be Thursday, April 21st. And that starts at 6 p.m. in the BMU auditorium. So,
mm-hmm. And when is the walk?
That is Thursday, April 21st, and that'll start at 9 p.m. So we have a keynote speech, we have survivor speakouts, we have a spoken word portion, and then we have the march that night. So
I went last year, and it was my first Take Back the Night, which is crazy to me, but it was, and it was like, oh my God, it changed my life. I walked away, and I had like, I was kind of like new to Chico and was like, oh, what's this about? And it was just like, you know, amazing, like so empowering. Also kind of scary, because like, you know, when you're a survivor, like somebody that's seen it, like that's such a scene, you know, to like be present in and to be able to like reach out and like be vulnerable for that support. Yeah. But it was awesome. It was just beautiful.
Lots of energy there to feed off of and to feel a part of. It might be painful or difficult.
Yeah. And we'll remind people too at the end of this when that is, because
I'll be there.
It's for everyone.
We'll remind everyone who's listening. Awesome.
Yeah, I think the thing for me also is just like going there and realizing like, wow, there are so many people here that I know who are like speaking out at the survivor speakouts, and I didn't even know that they were a survivor of sexual assault, and it's just really eye-opening, and it's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Right.
For a lot of
what
people.
We said. Conversations like this can like create healing and like open up, you know, and when you see that in numbers and your peers and your elders and people around you, you know, experiencing the same thing, it's definitely it's powerful.
You will see it everywhere if you start looking. Your friends, your family, people are affected by this. It's pretty sobering. So we kind of, we have a little guideline of discussion, and we wanted to kind of start with the topic of prevention and what we can do to stop this from happening. These numbers are high. They're really, really high. And so we had kind of, in preparation for this conversation and panel, we had discussed sex education and opening up the door to talking about this with your children before it's too late. Let's not wait till we're in college and finally seeking help in mental health counseling. Let's talk about it with our children and prevent it from happening. So one of the big things is sex ed. Do you think that sexual assault awareness should be included in sexual education?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, from a very young age. I feel like a lot of the time people kind of say like, oh, like that could be, that should be a topic for later on when kids are older. But like there are so many ways where you can teach children about the importance of consent without even necessarily making it a sexual thing, because consent is something that can be used in so many different ways in life, like telling children that they don't have to necessarily like hug a relative if they don't want to, and giving them that choice, and like making sure that they are aware that their body is their own, and saying like, oh, like if you're playing with another kid and they stop having fun, then you stop doing whatever you're doing with them, you know, that type of thing.
Boundaries.
Yeah.
Something that we don't teach people until it's too late, and then incarceration or worse. So I know Cheyenne and I had discussed like this common scene we always see in the park or with our family members, like children, a little boy and a little girl, and he's always coming in trying to give her a kiss. And she's saying, no, get off me, pushing him away. And the parents and everyone else like, oh, look how cute. She's playing hard to get. And just thinking about that and realizing that children are not these, they're not like, they are little humans. You know, they're going to grow up to be human and have behaviors that can be problematic. So recognizing that before it's too late.
Definitely.
It's not cute.
Yeah. Especially though, I don't know, I feel like also too, like parents trying to get their kids to like be like really physically close at a really young age. Like, you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think, but that behavior is generational, you know, like that is just like something that's normal in, you know,
right, or it could be
that type of setting
too.
Or cultural. Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, the whole like boys will be boys rhetoric and that type of thing.
Right.
It's a very dangerous thing growing up with that mentality.
Well, yeah, I mean, to women, but also to boys, because, you know, it creates this kind of like example of how they're supposed to be and what's acceptable and what's expected of them.
Yeah.
I mean, even in peer groups, you know.
Yeah. So I was just doing some reading before this, and there was a new legislation, and the effect of it came on January 1st of this year, Educational Code 51932, and it was introducing the fact to California that we cannot only provide abstinence-only sex education. So I started reading through the list of what that educational code looked like, and the only thing I saw that was remotely close to issues of consent and sexual assault was healthy attitudes concerning dating. That's really vague.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be a footnote, and I feel like of all the things that should be included in sexual education for adolescents, you should talk about what consent really is.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I'd love to start talking about now,
mm-hmm.
what it means, because I know the university is making a huge push to change people's perceptions about what consent is. It's not just, you know, the absence of a no.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if someone wants to jump in on what they think consent is. Or
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of this foggy knowledge about consent, and people don't really know, like, all of the things that can go into it. And yeah, I think a lot of the time it is very simplified into this, like, oh, if there's no, then it must be a yes, and that is a very dangerous notion to have. So I think for me, an important thing is realizing that consent has to be enthusiastic, it has to be affirmative, it has to be continuous. You can consent to something and not consent to another thing.
Right.
You can stop consent at any time, and it has to be like this enthusiastic yes, and not just kind of inferring, mm-hmm. or assuming that just because there's no, that means a yes. Mm-hmm. So,
right. I think, too, that I think one thing that does get kind of, like, confusing is consenting and then taking away consent and being able to change your mind, like, mm-hmm. in the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, oftentimes it looks like, oh, consent was given, so, you know, mm-hmm. move forward from there. But that's, and also, too, for me, like, realizing that I do have personal boundaries, mm-hmm. and that it's okay to just, like, I mean, even consent when it comes to, like, strangers or, mm-hmm. you know, friends, or just, like, you know, allowing somebody, I guess, in your personal space, mm-hmm. mentally and physically. But realizing that you have the boundaries and the power to, mm-hmm. you know, it starts to be, you know, look a different way for you as well.
Yeah, and along those lines, consent doesn't have to be, like, just in a sexual context, mm-hmm. you know? Like, even if you're someone who really likes hugging people, like, if you don't know that the person you're hugging is okay with that, then,
right,
you
like
know,
I get
ask.
Appreciated when I like, mm-hmm. I'm appreciated when I'm like, somebody asks me, mm-hmm. I'm just like, thank you for asking, because chances are
someone
is about to be kind of awkward
the yeah. first time, and they're like, may I hug you, and it was after a may really I? Emotional yeah. moment, and I said, I am going to start doing that every time, because it made me feel safe,
mm-hmm.
and that I had a place there, and that I could come into that hug without any feelings of trepidation. It was, I'm going to start doing that every time.
Yeah.
I can remember that was, it was awesome and it felt great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like that should be common practice. We invade each other's personal space on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think another thing that I hear a lot is like, when you talk about consent, especially with like college age students, and there's this kind of idea that like, it will ruin the moment if you ask for consent at mm-hmm. different stages. If you're having sexual interactions with someone, like if you ask, is this okay? Or do you like this? Like there's mm-hmm. this idea that it'll ruin the moment and it won't be sexy anymore. And it's just like, we have to get over that. Like mm-hmm, it has to right. be normalized. And that only comes by people actually putting that into practice.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like asking, do you like this, is going to better the experience, because mm-hmm. it's more mutual and you're communicating mm-hmm. through it.
Yeah.
It makes more sense to me.
Definitely.
It's not the culture that we live in, though.
Right. Like, what, I mean, I feel like if they taught that in sex ed, because mm-hmm. if you're teaching sex ed, obviously people are going to be sexually active. But, it, I mean, if you were to, you know, teach, like, hey, it's cool to ask, like, you know, mm-hmm. we're down with it. Like, it's sexy to ask something, you mm-hmm. know, and to ask for consent. We could normalize it. Yeah. I just think that, you know.
And
you're
also,
like you said, it's not the society we live in.
Right, giving women that space to feel pleasure too
right.
as well, because mm-hmm. that's not validated and that's not often sexy. So asking, is this good for you? Do you like this? And communicating about preferences is a real easy way to better the relationship mm-hmm. and to get consent, affirmative consent.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, very detailed and helpful consent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you like? That's a good question to ask in, in a pizza parlor and during sex. Mm-hmm.
Grace.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about pizza. So, and it's been about 17 minutes, so I just want to reiterate to the listeners that this is a sensitive topic. We're going to be talking about sexual assault, so if you're just tuning in and this is something that might be triggering for you, I invite you to go to another channel.
Yeah. Change the station.
Or listen mm-hmm. to a mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
CD. Or an 8-track.
Or an 8-track.
Whatever you've got in your car. Yeah, so with these 1 in 5 college-age women and many men too. I'm not saying it's not just happening to women. It's happening to a lot of people and of all ages, of all sex, all gender. How can we best support these people who approach us and say, we've lived through this? You know, what's the next step? Because I know that can be really intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think always believing the survivor is definitely an important part. Not asking things like, oh, like, what were you doing or what were you wearing? Of course, that is never, ever helpful and super victim blaming. So avoiding victim blaming language like that. And then I think the best thing we can do is listen and offer support and options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not telling people like, oh, you have to report this, because that is definitely an option that some people might want to do, but others might not want to. So mm-hmm. giving them that option and just giving them the support and a listening ear, I think, is the most important thing to do first and foremost. And then mm-hmm. ask them, you know, what are you comfortable with and how can I help you? What would you like me to do mm-hmm. to help you in this time?
Whatever you feel is best for you, I am here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then asking specifically too, how can I help you?
Right.
Do you want space? Do you want me to be here for you, but standing a little bit farther away? And asking about boundaries too. I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable and hard, but it's just going to open that dialogue and you can support that person. It's not easy.
Well, right. And also realizing that, like, in that moment, you know, that person's already coming to you with something so heavy mm-hmm. that, like, even those little questions, like, may not be answered. So, like, being able to, like, really tune in to, like, even body language and, like, how they're feeling when they're telling you, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to just be that tuned in and, like, that there for them is just important. Knowing that somebody's yeah. there.
Genuine and accessible.
Right.
Really important.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I've, like, just in friendships in general, I always appreciate when somebody, like, makes it clear to me that I don't have to hold this on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, just knowing that, like, or being there to, like, help them hold it is, mm-hmm. like, so important.
Really important.
Yeah. And being willing to, if they want to go to counseling or something like that, then being willing to go there with them and mm-hmm. be that support for them. And also, I feel like a lot of the time, our instant response can sometimes be anger against the perpetrator, and mm-hmm. that's not always the most helpful thing
yeah.
In terms of interacting with the survivor. And
yeah, that's really, yeah,
it's a good point.
Think about
yeah.
that is a mm-hmm. good point.
Yeah. Also that the acknowledging that everyone's experiences are different. Like mm-hmm. I know we had discussed that a lot of people know the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it can be interrelational. It's someone you know, you're very close to. So making assumptions about what it means to each person is not helpful either.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to look at it. I mean, it's not black and white, but if you were to look at it as a very, like, clear situation, like, all of the details just make it muddy, you know, and it's not helpful to the survivor either
mm-hmm.
in that case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a break. It's 6:20. You're on KZFR 90.1. I'm in the studio with Cheyenne.
Hi.
All right, we're going to play Standing in the Way of Control.
Ooh, this is the gossip. This is a good one.
Gossip.
Turn it up, seriously. It'll make you feel better, I promise. I promise.
Who you are, you can't stop crying.
Welcome back to It's Your Body. This is Grace.
And Cheyenne.
And Annalisa.
What up?
We're in the studio. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Done.
And we also want to clarify that we are talking about sexual assault on the radio. If this subject is sensitive to you or triggering, please feel free to change the station. Hello. All right, let's get into it. I think we really wanted to go over next community and just how it's affecting our community, what that looks like. Grace, I know that you had a few things you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, so I was looking online. It sent me down the rabbit hole of looking at statistics and reporting, and I was kind of curious about where do people go when they encounter this, and who's keeping record? You know, I know that everyone's experience is different, and the timing of when people come forward is different. So I'm wondering if organizations and like public health department or the police station or the hospital, are they getting together to put the numbers together, and where could I find it? I couldn't even find it, and I looked for a long time. So it's a question I have, and I invite the listeners to go look as well, and then ask people who are in charge at the police station or with the city, where are these statistics? What's happening in our community?
Yeah, I think it's hard too, though, because I feel like statistics all depend on whether or not somebody's coming forward. And this is something where it's, you know, it's you either are or you aren't, or you maybe are, or, you know, so it's not like just, I guess, taking a consensus of, you know, age, race, ethnicity, all of those things. It's definitely dependent on if there's a report made, if somebody else knows about it, if you go to your healthcare provider with it, if you go to your counselor with it, you know, things like that. So I would think it would be really hard to get an accurate statistic on, you know, how often and how many people.
A lot of underreporting. And even with that, the numbers, like the 1 in 5 college-aged women, that's alarming. I know that's just an estimate based on, I'm sure, larger analyses, but still, it's really shocking to me. And just some resources. I know Safe Place, I guess I hadn't noticed it in the first semester that I was here. I haven't been here for very long, but have they just reopened?
Yeah, they just kind of started up again, and they're really active this semester. And they just got Alex Brown as the head of Safe Place.
We tried to get Alex Brown on the radio. She has another engagement.
She's pretty busy this month.
She's the coolest.
But she does have a couple interns this semester, and they're really active. They're a really huge part of Take Back the Night. They're hosting a screening of The Hunting Ground on Wednesday of next week, and then a focus group where people can come and kind of talk about sexual assault prevention strategies specifically for the Chico campus. So they're doing a lot this semester, which is really great. And I think that they are a super valuable resource for sexual assault survivors.
Can we go over Take Back the Night really quick?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Can you talk about like how it, where it originated from, you know, the symbolism of taking back the night, just, and like also to how you guys interpret it and, you know, make it your own for your specific setting.
Yeah, Take Back the Night has been going on for, I don't even know exactly how long it's been going on for, but it's something that's nationwide. So many campuses participate in it, and it's a really great opportunity to just see how many people need this type of event and need this type of support. And taking back the night in terms of like the nighttime is kind of a time that's culturally and historically been unsafe for specifically women, just because the rates of sexual assault and kind of the notorious like rape, stranger rape type scene always occurs at night and those types of things. But just like taking back the night in terms of reclaiming the right to feel safe and secure after dark, and coming together and saying like, hey, this is a time when we can all do this silent candlelit march through campus and through downtown and take back the night and reclaim our right to feel safe and support each other in that. And specifically at Chico State, we have been doing it for years, and this is the first year that I've done Take Back the Night since the women's program coordinator kind of changes every year. Mm-hmm. But I think expanding it to a week-long event has been super helpful in just getting other organizations to collaborate with us. We have lots of different organizations participating in our committee to plan Take Back the Night. We have like Safe Place and CLIC and the CCLC, and which is the Cross Cultural Leadership mm-hmm. Center, and Rape Crisis and Catalyst and other organizations who all just come together and support and to plan this event, which I think is super powerful, just having not only campus organizations but also community organizations involved, because it isn't just for students. Mm-hmm. Of course, we invite the public and everyone in the community to come together and support. So
mm-hmm. So I've been to take the Chico Take Back the Night, which was silent, and then I went to the Sacramento Take Back the Night, which was rowdy. Do you guys prefer a silent march, and is there like a reason behind that?
I think the silent candlelit march kind of just gives the kind of feeling that we're going for, because it to us, it's very hard to kind of be super upbeat and mm-hmm. chipper about it when, you know, you've had all of these, especially since like the keynote speech and the survivor speakouts are often very heavy, just because mm-hmm. it's a very heavy topic and people are kind of processing that. So I think just giving people the space to process that as they're doing the march, and just also kind of commemorating all of the instances of sexual assault that have occurred on campus and mm-hmm. throughout everywhere.
Absolutely. It's so powerful too, because you walk through like past fraternities, you walk past all the bars and mm-hmm. you know, powerful stuff.
Where are you marching?
We usually march through campus and downtown, so kind of in a loop. Mm-hmm. Through like the Avs and past like the fraternity and sorority mm-hmm. houses, which is always interesting. And then back around, it usually just takes like half an hour or a little longer.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. And that's on the 21st, the
yes,
Thursday?
Yes. Yeah. So the march will begin at 9 p.m., but okay. the whole event begins at 6. And I encourage everyone to come to the whole event. Mm-hmm. It will be very potentially triggering. We will have counselors available from the Counseling and Wellness Center.
Really?
For yes.
Oh, I just got chills, because that was one thing that I found, like, as soon as I got there, it was really triggering. And mm-hmm. I at first, like, I was with my partner and I was just like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this, I don't know. And I saw it through and it was great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're totally right. And I feel better you saying that, because I felt not like a
my therapist,
you know,
will be there.
Not like a, yeah, exactly, not like a wrong survivor. Yeah. But like, you know, just
Yeah, it's very tricky, because it can definitely potentially be triggering, but it can also be very empowering. So yeah. just kind mm-hmm. of realizing that the event can activate some feelings, and being okay with feeling those things, but also realizing, like, if you need to do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself, like, we definitely welcome that. If you need to leave, mm-hmm. if you need to step out for a second, if you need to talk to someone, if you need to just, like, check out for a minute and go on your phone or something, then we totally understand that and welcome that. Mm-hmm. And our keynote speaker this semester is super great, and she is very understanding of the need to take care of yourself mm-hmm. however you want to. So
are you able to share who the keynote speaker is?
We aren't, just because of extenuating circumstances mm-hmm. with safety issues. She's okay. going through kind of like a legal case right now. So, okay. But she'll be there, and I'm sure there'll be her mm-hmm. name in the newspaper afterwards and things right. like that. But just
no,
leading
I
up to it.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited. It's my first Take Back the Night. Yeah. And awesome. I have heard that The Hunting Grounds is a great film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have noticed a change in the attitudes about getting people to think about this, even when they don't want to. I mean, I sat through I went through the program, on the computer, before you can register, you have to do this whole long program on safety and consent and sexual assault awareness. And I learned so much I didn't know. I feel like this actually, it's a really effective training. And I heard they're going to do another one. Yeah. Kind of like a refresher course.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Especially for the younger students too, that's really important.
Yeah, I think that I think that's super helpful, but just like continuing that education mm-hmm. afterwards, because I feel like a lot of the feedback that I've heard is kind of like people do it when they're like a freshman or a transfer and mm-hmm. then kind of forget about it afterwards. So having that like continuing education right. around consent.
Which is great when you guys have those tabling events, too, is because students will be reminded of the things they heard and saw, mm-hmm. and they're going to want to stop and ask questions. It's really helpful, mm-hmm. very useful as a student.
Yes.
I love it. So it's a week-long event coming up. You want to give the dates and the specifics?
Yes. So April 20th to 22nd. So April 20th, that's a Wednesday, we are going to have a tabling fair with various organizations from the campus and community, and we'll have sign making at that time for the march, because people make signs and then hold them up during the march. And that night, we will be having a screening of The Hunting Ground from 6 to 8. Mm-hmm. That's hosted by Safe Place. And then they'll have a post-film discussion and then a focus group for prevention strategies for sexual assault on Chico State campus. And that'll be from about 8 to 10.
And is anyone open to attend that focus group?
Yes, however, there is kind of a limited space for the focus group. I think it's like something like 32 or 36 people are allowed in the room. So if you aren't able to go to the focus group, then I would recommend the film and discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then Safe Place is going to have different organizations. They're going to have like Title IX and different mm-hmm. counselors there too. So that'll be great. Cool. Yeah. Something to look forward to. And the next day, that's the main event. We have the keynote speech starting at 6 p.m. We have survivor speakouts. We have two women's only survivor speakouts and then one gender inclusive survivor speakout. And those will be at 7 p.m. And then 8 p.m. will be the spoken word portion. And we have, I think, 9 people who are performing with a variety of different types of pieces. So I'm super excited for that. Mm-hmm. That'll be really powerful. And then at 9 p.m., the march will start in the SSC Plaza. And I can't remember what SSC stands for right now, but it's right outside of the BMU. So.
Okay. It's so funny. I have all these acronyms. I have no clue what they mean.
Yes. There are a lot.
I only know Bell Memorial Union. That's the only one.
There you go. Yeah. I know GSEC and BMU mm-hmm. and that's about it.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, April 22nd, we're going to have a debriefing brunch, mm-hmm. and that'll be held in the Cross-Cultural Leadership Center in the Merriam Library from 11 to 1. So that'll just be a time when people are able to process things and talk about mm-hmm. any feelings or emotions that they experience throughout the week and kind of debrief the week. Mm-hmm. So
that's a lot of activities.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
That's a huge week-long event that it's going to be exhausting but very fulfilling, I think.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All of us in the GSEC are mm-hmm. kind of gearing up for a very emotion-heavy week. So, and I have to thank my fellow staff members so much, my director, Eliza, and all of my interns. They've just been so great in planning this and keeping me mm-hmm. kind of sane throughout the week. So,
self-care next week.
Yes.
Yes. That'll be huge. So, in terms of prevention, I noticed, and I heard it on the news, about that alley behind West Sacramento along the train tracks, the whole kerfuffle with lighting mm-hmm. and how now they are asking the community to come forward and pay for lighting because of such a high number of assaults occurring. I mean, it's infamously called Rape Alley, you know, and a lot of drunk students walk home along that area, and they were saying it was costing a lot of money. And I'm just thinking, it's a short span. Why aren't we having people patrolling it? You know, wouldn't that make sense as well? But do you think that asking the community to fund lighting for this area is appropriate? Should we be asking the city to fund it or other organizations? I think
it's
the sheriff's department
yeah.
is doing it.
Yeah, I think that would definitely be like a kind of no-brainer.
Right, because it's putting people at risk.
Yeah, there's a lot of ill-lit streets. And I know that someone was talking about kind of making a map mm-hmm. as a class assignment, someone I was talking with, about making a map of where all the lit streets are so that you could plan your route home at night.
Yeah, yeah. I actually had one of my fellow staff members knew someone who actually did make a map mm-hmm. of all of the blue lights throughout the area. So, like, the emergency lights that people can go to and press, and someone mm-hmm. will come if they're in a situation where they need help.
Yeah.
And kind of made a map of all the lights and made a map, I think, of all of the crime that goes mm-hmm. on around campus, including sexual assault. Mm-hmm. So that is super helpful to look at and kind of just, like, eye-opening to see, like,
yeah.
how dangerous those areas are, and especially like the lack of lighting. And
it'd be really nice to make that available to students if they wanted it, to see where those areas are.
Definitely.
I mean, but let's stop putting up barriers. Let's unload the gun, you know. Let's start with communication and training and education. Let's stop this from happening.
I have a question. So like, what, I guess, like, what is like prevention and like prevention strategy really look like? You know, like, I'm like genuinely wondering, like, what, like, give me an example of like prevention, like sexual assault prevention.
I think that a lot of it has to do with like education around consent, of course. Absolutely. And then also doing kind of like programs for organizations and trainings and things like that for organizations to be able to help survivors of sexual assault to have like survivor competent conversations and things like that. I think just kind of shifting from the whole idea that prevention always has to do with the potential victims or survivors.
I guess that's
or environmental like issues like light. Let's get deeper than that. Because I was talking to a friend last week about what if there had been someone in the school who recognized these danger signs and said, I'm going to take this child out of this dangerous situation. What about training for educators? What about better mental health for children? Recognizing that kids have valid feelings and that we need to listen to children when they tell us things and give them the space to tell us things. I think that would be a huge critical piece.
And I think in terms of like the fear around reporting sexual assault, we have to address that, and the fact that like a lot of the time when people report sexual assault, it's like this thing of like, is it really worth it if I have to go through this long process and the perpetrator, the chances of the perpetrator actually getting charged or put in jail is extremely low, and the rates in terms of like people who commit sexual assault and people who actually go to jail or do any type of jail time for it are extremely low. And that's why there's this kind of not a huge rush to report sexual assault, because a lot of the time it isn't the most fruitful thing you can do. So
look at the messages in the media right now.
So I have been following Kesha very closely because she's my girl. And she basically, what happened with Kesha is her producer, Dr. Luke, had been sexually assaulting her and manipulating her the entire time they worked together. So basically, Kesha came to Sony and was like, I want out of my contract. Like, I want out of my contract. I want out. They had signed some crazy, like, five-album contract. Like, but Sony said no. Sony basically was like, well, we're not going to let you out of your contract with us, but you don't have to work with Dr. Luke. And just like looking so intently into it, it's like the fact that she's still having to like really like work alongside of her abuser, you know,
and that nothing's happening.
And what's crazy is that, you know, just going back to like victim blaming, she, there's like this footage that they found of her, of like, basically just saying like in 2011, somebody else had mentioned, you know, had came, you know, had outed Dr. Luke basically. And they went to Kesha, and Kesha was like, no, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what's happening. She was like 18 at the time. And so when she came out this time around, I mean, the media using that against her to say, well, in 2011, you said it wasn't true. It's just, I don't know. I just, so in situations like that, it can often look like coming forward isn't going to do anything, you know, and it can often look like you're not only are you not really going to face, you know, 100% support, but there are going to be a lot of people against you, you know, either saying that you're lying or asking you stupid questions or siding with your abuser or your assailant. And taking it from there, I recently was able to call out my abuser, and just having that experience, having been like sexually assaulted, and it was, you know, such a statistic. It was somebody I knew. It was somebody I trusted. But being able to come forward and actually have, like, a pretty... And it was weird, too. It wasn't... I mean, it wasn't a law enforcement situation. It was very much, like, coming to other members in a community that was supposed to be a safe space, letting them know, and them kind of holding onto it for me and taking responsibility to remove that person from that space. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be as small as that. It can be as small as letting a close friend know and them cutting ties with that person to, like, mm-hmm. allow you to heal next to them. And so I think also, too, we need to kind of not make coming forward so vague mm-hmm. because, like, in my situation, the first time I came forward, it happened exactly how you'd think it would. It was swept under the rug. Nobody really cared. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that was 4 years ago. And so coming forward again 4 years later, it was very much like I molded over for 2 or 3 or 4 or 8 months. You know, like it was constantly I see this person in this space where they don't belong. And, you know, and I was curing it all. I knew that mm-hmm. them being involved wasn't making it a safe space for the people around them. Mm-hmm. And so it got to the point where it wasn't my responsibility to lie for them anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't my responsibility to carry that around. And I thought it was really important that I share that because that, I mean, of course, the first time around it didn't happen, but the second time around, being able to find support from a community that I wasn't really a part of anymore mm-hmm. because this had happened. And when I came forward with it, I wasn't supported. So I felt like, I'll remove myself from this community yeah. because, you know, so going back to that community and also going to women that I didn't even know very well mm-hmm. that I was just like, I need to tell you this, you know, yeah. I need to tell you this. I need to get it out. I don't want to hold on to it. You know, it's time for me to heal. And having the outcome be so positive mm-hmm. and so quiet. Like there was no, I don't know what they said. I don't know what magic was made, but I didn't face any repercussions. Yeah. There was no contact from the abuser. Like, I mean, it really ended up being something positive. And I'm definitely not advocating for, you know, any survivor of abuse mm-hmm. or sexual assault to, you know, mm-hmm. out anybody or come forward with any information when they're not ready. But, you know, I do want to share that because mm-hmm. it can be positive in situations yeah. and each situation looks completely different. There's never right. a wrong or right time. It's just whenever you're ready and, you know, whenever it does become a part of your healing.
And so using that time against right. them saying, well, you didn't come out immediately. Everyone's path to healing and to openness is different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it just,
and I mean, it was events like Take Back the Night where like mm-hmm. we went to Take Back the Night and it was just like, you know, you just don't feel so alone when you can see women in these situations and it's like, oh my gosh, the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, you just want to hug everyone and you just want to like be a part of it. And to just know that and to like leave with that feeling of having this army of like mm-hmm. humanity and support behind you is just, it's insane. It's so powerful. And like, I don't know, I'm very open talking about my experiences. Mm-hmm. And I haven't always been, it's been in like the last 2 months, but if anybody wants to talk about it, let's talk about it because yeah. it's about opening the conversation mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, sometimes being tender is good. And yeah. you know, also being an example of just like surviving and like mm-hmm. doing it and
yeah,
it'll be okay.
Thank you
just got to get there.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for letting me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
It's a good space. I mean, we have to support each other and give each other the opportunity mm-hmm. to speak out and find that healing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I think it was really important what you said about your friends kind of being there for you and cutting that person off, because mm-hmm. I think that's huge. And that's right. something that people don't always mention is like, that's something that you can do is listen to the survivor, support the survivor. And if you're having to be friends or know the perpetrator, like, cut them out. That's
right.
A huge
and like
thing.
And honestly, like, rape apologists are a real thing. Like, mm-hmm. there are certain people at this moment that I am permanently cutting out of my life because I just don't get it. Like, I just don't get it. And it's not up to me anymore to have to get it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to get it, you
That's
know?
Right. Yeah.
You know? And realizing that is power.
Emotional saying. Boundaries.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Boundaries. I
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
I think that's also kind of the danger with, like, the stranger rape idea or mm-hmm. the idea that, like, it can't be, like, someone who's close to you, your brother, your father, your friend, or someone like mm-hmm. that, because it's definitely, like, real people who are doing this and people who are, you know, definitely people that might be close to you, and we have to accept that and not just kind of blindly be like, oh, that person could never do that. And
right. And I think too, like, having it been like a partner, you know, it was like, well, I don't know what their relationship is, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's mm-hmm. just when you start like putting down labels and like, you know, looking at the relationship of the the two or however many people, it gets mm-hmm. muddy.
Yeah. And it's even more difficult when it's a family member too.
Absolutely.
Then you have to say, well, are we going to cut this person out? Yes.
Mm-hmm. We are.
Well, ladies, it has been real.
It's been real, real. Been thanks real. For letting me get all that out. Hopefully, no, there's
thank you for
just
sharing.
Our friends are listening. Seriously, if anybody ever wants to talk about feelings, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Cheyenne, maybe sometime we'll do a phone in.
Oh my god!
When we figure out the phones.
I don't even want to give advice. I just want to talk to you about your feelings.
Oh man, we love feelings here on It's Your Body. Well, we're going to end the show with a song, and this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
Bye, y'all.
That passed from you to me, the flow between us.
one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. Change me in any way. You don't own me. Don't tie me down, 'cause I'd never stay.
This is It's Your Body. It's Your Body is supported by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by locally owned Mama Celeste's Stone Baked Pizzeria, serving 30 signature thin crust Chicago style stone baked pizzas, calzones, hand tossed salads, homemade meatballs, wings, and including a vegan option. Mama Celeste is located in Safeway Plaza on Nord, open every day at 4 p.m. and at noon on Sunday. That's Mama Celeste Stone Baked Pizzeria. You can reach them at 345-1510. And by Dallmeyer Insurance Agency, a full-service independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dallmeyer Insurance provides a wide range of coverage options for individual needs, from homeowners and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. Dallmeyer offers assistance by calling 342-6421 in Chico, 553-3424 in Oroville, and also at chicoinsurance.com. And that was Leslie Gore, classic song.
Love it.
This has been It's Your Body on FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. It was heavy. Mm-hmm. We hope everybody is able to chill after this and, I don't know.
Process and call your therapist.
Process, know that it's okay, and we're here for you.
All right, we're going to play another song.
Game face. Here we go.
I've got bipolar disorder. My shit's not in order. I'm overweight. I'm always late. I've got too many things to say. I rock mom jeans, cat earrings, extrapolate my feelings. My family is dysfunctional, but we have a good time killing each other. They tell us from the time we're young to hide the things that we don't like about ourselves, inside ourselves. I know I'm not the only one who spent so long attempting to be someone else. Well, I'm over it. I'm so gay. Sometimes I cry a whole day. I care a lot. Use an analog clock and never know when to stop. And I'm passive aggressive.